Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Successful migrants in Minnesota, today on Advanced. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon, and you are joining both myself and my co-host, Eva, in the studio today for the second part of our July Society article. Eva, what is this article called?
Hi, everyone. Today's article is a continuation from yesterday. So the title is From Refugees to Community Builders.
Mm-hmm.
Today we are going to be talking about being homesick.
Oh, rough. Were you homesick when you immigrated?
I think when I moved last year, not so much, because I'm now an adult. But when I first moved for college, I was a little bit, because I was only 18 then, so that was a little bit, it was rougher.
So for you, it's less linked to country and more linked to leaving home.
Not so much
the distance, or it's just the fact you're not living with your parents.
The both times that I moved were very near home, you know, like within 7 hours at most. Yeah,
that's not very near, really.
No, but it's still Asia. So there's no time difference. True. I think that's important. The time difference is the one that gets you, because you can't call someone, you can't get a message through and a reply. But yeah, I think age matters, because, you know, it affects your maturity, you know, how you see the world, how you can stand on your 2 feet, and the time that you have spent at home.
Yeah, I actually, like you, did not have huge issues with homesickness.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been plagued with, from time to time, bouts of real culture shock.
Oh, for sure.
They talk about real culture shock. And So I think it would be fair to say that in our article today, we could mix those two under the title homesickness.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically yesterday we were introduced to this group, the Hmong, who had been allies of the United States during the Vietnam War, albeit not so much in Vietnam. The people we were talking about who ended up moving to the United States were from Laos, mm-hmm. which is the neighboring country. And they were involved in a secret war that was going on in connection to the Vietnam War. When their side lost, they became refugees, meaning it was no longer safe for them. They were being persecuted, and we learned the word reprisals were being taken against them, meaning sort of revenge was being taken against them. And so they moved to other places. One of the things we learned when they moved to other places was that it was initially difficult for them to move to the United States.
Yeah.
Because, well, the United States opened its door to Cambodians and Vietnamese refugees. They had, I think the term they used was deemed, means decided or judged, that the Hmong were, and they have in quotations here, meaning this is not the words of the writer or Advanced, too primitive to survive in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, because they were hill people living in the, you know, in primitive conditions.
Yeah.
But we're also told at the end of yesterday's lesson that America had terribly misjudged Hmong adaptability, because these were people who had been moving around as refugees for a very long time and had a proven ability to adapt. And that seems to have been true. We learned yesterday about the success of the Hmong community in, I can never remember. Minneapolis is the city in Minnesota, but this is in Minnesota more broadly. There's like Olympic athletes. What else was there?
Well, there were chefs, writers, and the newest mayor that they had.
Yeah. So they'd become, in what is, I guess, you know, less than my lifetime, they've gone from being refugees to being important parts of the landscape of this new state.
Mm.
They've really built a thriving community. And so we're going to continue on with that today. Listeners, if you have your July magazine, I would encourage you to grab it and open it up to the Society article. If you don't have your magazine, I would encourage you to get one. because it's a great way to advance your learning and to support us here at Advanced Radio. So without further delay, we're going to do three readings today. All three are fairly short. Let's do the first one together now.
Homesick. The earliest refugees were key to easing the way for later waves of immigrants. When the Herr family arrived in Minnesota in December 1975, they faced both an unforgiving winter and the emotional challenges of being the first Hmong family here. Dang's wife, Shua, now 72, remembers those early days living with a sponsor family in Anoka. While Dang was at school all day studying English, Shua stayed inside her bedroom, looking out the window and sobbing. After baby Bill was born the following February, Shua was reminded how far she was from home. Shua paced, anxious and homesick. She also could not make herself the traditional chicken herb soup that has nourished Hmong moms for centuries. The herbs were nowhere to be found in Minnesota.
Okay, so thank you very much for that reading, Linda. Okay, we were saying before this, we might be able to mix culture shock and homesick, but this is sounding pretty homesick to me, hey?
Yeah.
Though it is, you know, to be honest, talking about the feelings of one person, basically, right?
Yeah, it is.
So they tell us the earliest refugees. Now, yesterday we were introduced to this family. They were key to easing the way for later waves of immigrants. How does that happen? Well, we sort of see that illustrated. Like in this reading, they can't find familiar food. There are language barriers. Nobody speaks the language. All of the cultural practices are different. The environment is different. Like the weather,
yeah,
you know, is different. They're living with a host family who do everything in different ways. So they
Correct.
Have limited independence.
Yeah.
And once your first Hmong family is established, there is an interesting term they use here. I think they said a sponsor family. Mm-hmm. Was that right? Sponsor family?
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a system in the United States where refugees are sort of taken in by other American families.
Yeah.
Kind of help them get established.
Yeah. But teach them the ways of the land, maybe.
That's right. But once you are an established Hmong family, you can sponsor other Hmong families.
Right.
And that makes the transition much easier, I would think, right?
Yeah.
So this is sort of the process they're describing. And then in the next sentence, we get into when the family arrived in Minnesota in December 1975, they faced an unforgiving winter. Oh, this is dear to my heart, that phrase.
What's an unforgiving winter? I can relate as well.
Where have you faced an unforgiving winter, Singaporean?
I mean, I am from Southeast Asia, right?
Yeah.
So it's just hot the whole year. So when I first moved for college, I had my first winter, you know, like negative 10. Was it unforgiving? Well, living in modern world, I have my jackets, my fleece jackets, okay? But I can imagine in 1975, they probably didn't.
I feel like they had
anything.
Winter coats in 1975.
I don't know. I hope so. Yeah, maybe, right? You would think.
It's just very different.
Yeah.
You know, I actually returned from Taipei to my hometown of Mount Forest during kind of a Chinese New Year a couple of years ago. And normally in Canada at that time of year, there's a lot of snow.
Right.
But there wasn't this time. And one of the things I realized was even though it's dark during that part of the year, when you have white snow everywhere, it reflects light and brightens things up. But when there's no snow, it's like depressing.
Oh,
cold, dark, depressing.
Yeah.
So this is the unforgiving part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not that you've done anything wrong that needs forgiveness. It just means it doesn't stop. It doesn't give you a break.
Makes you feel horrible.
Constant trouble with this winter. The other thing was the emotional challenges of being the first family there. And so they go on to describe some of these emotional challenges. In particular, sort of I'm going to use the term here, matriarch of the family.
Mm-hmm.
What is a matriarch?
The matriarch is usually the female representative of a family, you know.
Kind of the oldest one, usually.
Yeah.
the leader.
It's like the queen.
The female leader of the family. The male version is a patriarch with a P. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about basically the grandmother here who is 72 now. She remembers those early days living with a sponsor family. So that's the family who had sort of taken them in to show them how America worked in Anoka. I don't know. Well, I can't remember how Linda pronounced that. Someplace in Minnesota. So basically people were at school all day studying English, but this grandmother was stuck at home. She was in her bedroom looking out the window and not just crying, sobbing.
Yeah.
What's the difference between crying and sobbing?
I think sobbing is just like, you know, heaving of your chest and your shoulders and like just really
like intense crying. Yeah. Really broken crying.
Yeah, she's just like, why am I here?
Yeah.
Who am I?
Then the baby was born.
Mm-hmm.
So tough time anyway. She was pregnant during all this.
Hormones, man.
Yeah. The baby's born and she was reminded how far she was from home. Now why? Well, you know, when babies are born, there are a lot of traditions and cultural practices that come into play. Like, you know, here there's the whole 40-day thing.
I know.
You know, and they, like people have to eat. What is it, that alcohol chicken, sesame alcohol chicken? Or
maybe
there's special
red ginger
dishes.
Yeah, I think
you know?
Being Asian, there are a lot of traditions and food, you know, related to it. Like you can't shower maybe for a few days. You got to eat things that are very healthy to kind of provide for your body what it lost with having a baby.
Yeah, that's the idea. So, you know, this happens. And then, you know, she's anxious because, you know, everybody's anxious during this kind of period of their life. But she couldn't make herself the traditional chicken herb soup that had nourished, meaning given health to Hmong mums for centuries, because the ingredients, the herbs or the herbs, were nowhere to be found in Minnesota. You couldn't buy the things you needed to make the soup.
Yeah.
So, you know, emotional blows, physical blows, just a very difficult time on this new frontier.
Yep.
And that's the title of our next reading. So let's do that together now.
A new frontier. As more Southeast Asians made the state their new home, Shua started working as an interpreter for early childhood education in St. Paul, helping teach other moms how to cook using a stove and bundle up their kids for Minnesota winters. Dang also made sure to lift others up. He helped found what became Lao Family Community of Minnesota, a social services organization, and planned annual gatherings that thrive to this day, including New Year celebrations and the Hmong International Freedom Festival. He helped found the St. Paul Hmong Alliance Church, one of the largest of its kind in the nation. A nod to his family's initial pangs of homesickness, Dang established two Hmong grocery stores in St. Paul.
All right, so a new frontier. Usually when we use this term, we're kind of playing into that American view of America, right? Like Americans think of the new frontier as being sort of the area that they are exploring and moving into and developing, like the Wild West, if you will.
Yep.
Right? So the American history, the story of America, is one of expanding into new territories and new frontiers, making them part of the American system. And I think they're using that language here because this story of this family, the Hmong, actually is a pretty good example.
Correct.
Of, like we were saying yesterday, the perfect American dream story.
Yeah.
So Americans like, I think for the most part, when immigrants have this sort of success story, because it encourages the kinds of things that people like to believe about America.
Like
you work hard
and
you're going to succeed.
Yep.
And America is a place of freedom.
And
anybody
dreams
can come
true.
And you can work your way up. And,
and
that's basically what is being described here. The Hmong, this is sort of the two paragraphs that describe the development of the Hmong success.
Yeah.
as that pathway was laid out by this family. So more Southeast Asians made the state their new home, meaning people were coming into the area following that Vietnam War. And this grandmother, who we've been talking about, who was so heartbroken after the birth of the child and being trapped during that first winter in her bedroom, worked as an interpreter for early childhood education in St. Paul. Now, if you're working as an interpreter for early childhood education, what do you imagine you're doing?
I would think helping kids understand the language.
I thought that too. But teachers. Then, you know, I actually at one point did teach kindergarten.
Uh-huh.
And kids learn English in like 3 months, like little kids in preschool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I think this was? As a parent, one of the difficulties of sending my children to Chinese preschool, kindergarten, was that I didn't necessarily understand what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I couldn't really help them very well with, like, the Chinese homework or, like, the Bupama stuff.
Right,
you know what I mean? And my sense is that she was sort of, like, helping schools communicate with parents.
Right.
Because I feel like the kids probably adapted really quickly.
That's true. That makes sense.
Really quickly. But I don't know. That's just kind of a guess here. Mm. It doesn't really tell us clearly from this language. Nonetheless, she was basically working using her language skills somehow in connection with, you know, early childhood education, which basically means like preschool or kindergarten mm-hmm. stuff. She was helping to teach other moms. Now, there was a comma here, so this is a second thing. She was also helping to teach other moms how to cook using a stove, because presumably if they're refugee hill people, they've been cooking over fires.
Correct.
Or other things. So now they're learning to use modern kitchens mm-hmm. to make maybe traditional dishes.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just spent our first reading talking about the unforgiving winter. So she's teaching them survival skills, how to bundle up your children. What are you doing when you bundle up your children?
You are wrapping them up really, really tightly, like a little mm-hmm. dumpling, so that they stay safe and secure inside whatever you're wrapping them in.
Decades ago, here on the island, when I would receive kindergarten students, the ones who were brought to school by their grandparents were frequently wearing like 8 sweaters.
Yeah.
They were bundled up.
They were.
Because it was
cold
and they were greatly loved.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So they were often, I remember, I have this great memory of kids sort of sitting in a class, putting their hands up one at a time, asking if they could take off layers. And,
so
you know,
cute.
My assistant teacher who was from here would always say, like, how many shirts are you wearing? And they would be like, 1, 2, 3, 4. Six. They would be like, 6.
Oh,
and she
cute.
Would say, you can take off 3.
Wow, so cute.
Yeah, I have great memories of that. So kids being bundled up, very essential in Minnesota winter, very cold winter. Maybe also essential here. Now, her husband also made sure to lift others up. What are you doing when you're lifting others up?
You are helping others, you know, enabling them.
So he did this in a number of ways. One was he helped to found what later became the Lao Family Community, which is described as a social services organization. So it's kind of a community organization that helps people with whatever the need may be at the time. He planned annual gatherings. You know, I assume this is like festival stuff. They talk about the New Year's celebration for the Hmong community.
Yeah.
I assume that's kind of like Lunar New Year.
Yes.
As opposed to January 1st.
Yeah.
And the Hmong International Freedom Festival. See how Americans would love the name of that festival right there?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. He helped to found a church, the St. Paul Hmong Alliance Church, which is one of the largest in the nation.
Wow.
Now, presumably that's not one of the largest churches, but one of the largest Hmong churches for this group in the nation. And, well, they had pangs of homesickness mm-hmm. because of the food, remember? Pangs means
a like sudden feeling, you know, of
pain.
It comes.
Painful feeling.
Yeah, it just suddenly
like
hits
a stabbing.
You. Yeah.
You've been, oh!
Correct.
I miss the food.
Yeah.
Right? So what did they do to deal with these pangs of homesickness?
Well, he established 2 Hmong grocery stores.
Yeah.
That's wild.
This is important.
Yeah.
You know,
Very entrepreneurial.
My family visits you know, Asian grocery stores within the first couple of days of going to Canada each summer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you want to
you just get some comfort food.
I know.
You throw it in the refrigerator.
And sometimes you want to just experience the chaos, you know? Because Asian supermarkets are so different. It's loud. It's
the ones we go to
different.
Aren't. They're pretty... Well, you know, like there have been Asians in Canada for quite a while. So I would say they're pretty Canadianized. The foods are authentic.
Yeah.
But in terms, you know, it's not like morning market, like
people fighting over
green onions or something.
Because it's a supermarket. Sure, I get it. But yes, you do see a lot of Asian food, more Asian food, a lot of cooked food, I remember.
Yeah, you just want to make sure you pick up some dumplings.
Yeah.
And some, you know, like manto or whatever
that you can steam up.
Yeah, things like that.
Okay, when my family visited Canada, we did a lot of that.
You did?
Go to the Asian supermarket to get groceries and food, hot food.
That's the advantage of having people who have broken ground before you, paved the trail.
Correct,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it means you can experience different countries and cultures, but not in a way that is unsettling. Like you can do it a bit at a time.
Correct.
That's nice.
Yeah, very enterprising, I must say. This.
Yeah, I give thanks for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what our next reading's about.
Yeah.
Giving thanks. So let's do our last reading together now.
Giving thanks. While many community members are thriving, disparities persist. About a fifth of Hmong Minnesotans over 25 lack a high school diploma or its equivalent. It was only when Deng's daughter, Risa, became an adult that she realized how much her parents helped shape the community. My dad, he was a big visionary person, she said. We were so young to understand that at the time. We give thanks for the Hmong who bravely started over in Minnesota. They paid a painful price, but showed us just what they could do when given room to try.
Okay, so we've basically been working away on this theme that the Hmong community is doing very well. It's thriving.
Mm-hmm.
That's the language they use here. But apparently not everyone in the community is thriving. There are still, I think they use the term disparity there, I think Linda used, which basically means big differences. So there's a big difference between the most successful members of the Hmong community and the least successful members. And they give us an example of that in the next sentence. What do they say?
They say about a fifth of the Hmong Minnesotans over 25 lack a high school diploma or its equivalent.
Okay.
Means they probably only go to school until middle school or high school.
They drop out of high school.
Yeah.
Now that may be because of economic things, like maybe they need to work.
Mm.
You know, or maybe their families are running small businesses and
they gotta be there to participate.
Like there's a lot of different reasons. It doesn't necessarily mean they're bad students.
It's true.
But it does mean, you know, I guess one of the things I learned in Asia, living in Asia, is that sometimes things take more than one generation.
Mm.
You know? And one of the things I've always kind of appreciated about the way Asian families seem to think and function is that they're able to stay on task for more than one generation.
Mm-hmm,
that's not so true with Western families. Okay. Though, you know, there are exceptions, obviously, but less true in the West. So,
true.
You know, maybe they have left school for good reason, but nonetheless, if you don't have a high school diploma, I mean, let alone a college degree, your options are limited in a place like the United States, right? And so when the daughter of this family, Risa, became an adult, she realized how much her parents had helped shape the community. Now, presumably, they had helped shape the community by providing opportunities for people.
So many opportunities.
To be doing things successfully. She, in particular, there's a quote here where she gives credit to her father. What does she say about her dad?
She said that he was a big visionary person.
Mm-hmm.
And importantly, they were too young to understand that at that time.
Yeah. Now, when you're a visionary person, what's that mean? You're seeing things, obviously.
Yeah, you're seeing possibilities, I would say, you know, what things could be in the future.
So you're not seeing, like, looking at things the way they are now.
Yeah.
Instead, you have a plan.
Correct.
A vision for the future.
Like, maybe someone might see an empty classroom, but you see, whoa, 1,000 jobs being created, you know?
Yeah.
You see possibility, I would say.
Now, the children when they were kids, did not understand that.
For sure.
You know, you just think it's normal. Whatever your parents are doing, that's normal.
Yeah, they probably think, why is dad working so hard? You know, why is he always helping others, maybe? You know, why is mom
sobbing in the bedroom looking out the window at the winter?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, kids don't know.
They don't.
Yeah, so they didn't know that, but as an adult, she came to appreciate this sort of character that her parents embodied. I think both parents really are good examples of this. And so, what do we hear here at the very end? This is interesting because this sentence is not written by a member of this family. This is from the writer.
Mm.
And it is fairly great praise of the community. So I would guess this is a writer who is from Minnesota.
Yeah.
And they're sort of praising this community for its contributions to the broader Minnesota landscape or community. What do they say?
They say that, you know, we give thanks for the Hmong who bravely started over in Minnesota.
Yeah. So why are they giving thanks? Well, because these people have greatly improved the quality of life for everybody, not only for themselves.
Created jobs and all that.
It goes on to say they paid a painful price. And again, that's, you know, part of being a refugee, right? Mm. You lose the much of what you had, you're forced to sort of flee into the unknown, rebuild things, and that's a, you know, an economic price, a physical price, and an emotional price, as we've sort of seen. But they showed just what they could do when given room to try.
Yeah.
So that speaks to that adaptability they've made reference to throughout this article.
Yeah.
I didn't know very much about the Hmong until I read this article.
Well, I have had a couple of classmates in college who are from Laos and who are Hmong. And it's incredible because they also left their families, you know, to go to another country to learn a different language.
So they were actually from, they weren't like refugee families who had left.
They weren't. But they made the decision to leave their family for higher education, you know. You know, and a lot of them, because they leave their family to learn something new, they always want to stay there. And, you know, like this family, you know, want to make a name for themselves in a new country.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Listeners, that brings us to the end of our Society article for July. But we're going to do more in advance in the coming days, and we hope you'll join us for those lessons too. Until then, I'm Simon.
I am Eva.
Saying goodbye.
See you.